Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
You're in the madhouse now.
Ahoy hoy everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, the Leisure Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. I am your host, Bob Mackey. Who else is here with me today? Thank you. I need that sound clip to live. Who else is here today?
This way. Christopher Antistam.
Henry Gilbert.
And I'm Dave Rudden, and I'm just a composite of other successful logos.
And today's episode is Flaming Moe's, which aired on November 21st, 1991, and Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in history.
Boy, Bobby, this week, Queen frontman Freddie Mercury passes away from pneumonia.
Oh, related to AIDS.
Mikhail Gorbachev is failing to hold together the Soviet Union, and Cyndi Lauper gets married in a ceremony officiated by Little Richard. Woo!
Are they still together? Who is that?
Officiated.
I missed
Little
that.
Richard, I married a woman.
she married a unfamous man.
Yeah, but they seem so happy together.
But yeah, poor Freddie Mercury. I think a couple weeks ago in the news it was that they had confirmed he had AIDS, which had been a suspicion basically for a decade with Mercury. And sadly, they're like, yeah, he does have it, and it's not looking good.
Oh, wow. Gorbachev, like, all the stress of that must have, that's what gave him that rash on his head.
It's port wine.
That is a modern millennial understanding of history, I've ever heard it.
He is right a living there, birthmark.
That was a constant joke on Saved by the Bell.
Yeah.
It's like, really? Does Gorbachev have a thing on his head?
Oh, my God. But, yeah, the USSR could not hold together.
Nope. Mm. And it wasn't Reagan's doing. It just fell apart of its own free will. So this episode is about Moe's Bar, the first Moe's Bar episode. And I do want to ask you guys real quick, do you have any like local watering holes that would be your Moe's? Because I do, and I was wondering...
Yeah.
I hate paying for alcohol, so I don't.
I mean, like, every bar in San Francisco, where most of us are based, or, like, you guys in Oakland and Berkeley, like, the bars are all very expensive, and even the dive bars are, like, you don't have that kind of rapport, I think, with your bartenders, but, like... Mm-hmm. Just from, like, the outside look of it, I don't think I've ever actually been in there, but there was a bar near, like, a couple blocks away from where I grew up called Mr. Beery's. And it was
What do they serve, I wonder?
Yes, and, it like, the logo outside is just a living beer mug.
My dad had a shirt with one of those on it. I'm like, I can't wait to be involved with whatever this cartoon beer is.
And drink my fluids, everybody!
But, like, my brothers would go there, and when I wouldn't drink, and I'm like, that place sounds... grimy and nasty. I don't ever want to go there, but now I kind of want to go there, but I don't think it's around anymore.
Nah, see, yeah, I the only ones I go to are usually when other people go to them and I meet them there, like Bobby G's in Berserkly.
Like a true leader.
I do have a watering hole, and I won't say the name of it in case anyone wants to make like a bob suit later in life, but I have to say, like, I know what it's like to have like a Moe's in my life, because I can walk in, they're like, hey Bob, and like, I don't even have to order, they just bring me the beer I usually get.
Wow.
And it's just like, I talk to the bartender, it's great.
Yeah, I did have like a corner bar at like when I worked at GamePro, where it was like they knew me, but like I don't think they knew my drink or anything.
Shout out to Tallahassee, Florida, where I'm from. Waterworks. Hello, Don. I know you're listening, big NPR fan. it was our local place when we were there. I go back home. I don't even have to call my friends because most of them will just show up there, and it's real nice. Real nice. Called Waterworks. It has waters cascading down all the way.
So one thing I did want to add about just like the observationalness of just how Moses portrayed observationalness, that's a word, right? I don't know. But it's the ever-present barflies. We see the same barflies. They never talk. Those guys are at my bar. And any bar you go to, there will be three or four regulars, middle-aged, very sad men who smell awful.
Really?
They universally will just smell awful, like cigarettes and unwashed bed sheets. They're not homeless. They're just pathetic drunks, but they're always there. They are always there.
So I understand pathetic drunks more being one now, but like the idea that like you have to... it speaks to something I think that's nice about people, that people would rather be around one another, yeah. even if they're not
it's
speaking.
Nice. I just would hope they would bathe one day.
Yeah, but, well, but that's the thing. That, like, it doesn't matter to them. It's just like, I'd just be happier here
yeah.
than I would be at home.
Yeah, but at the same time, it is a cautionary tale. I can just look down the bar and like, that's not going to be me. I'm going to cut myself off at like 2 oh, no. and then go home.
No, that guy
I drink alone like a man.
Yes.
Man. So that guy told himself
with
that
my book.
20 years ago. Though,
exactly.
So. But let's talk about what this episode's really about. Matt Groening being a fraud.
Oh.
So this is something they would never talk about on the commentaries, and it was a theory I didn't even know until last year with the passing of Sam Simon. So Sam Simon is the third name you'll see in the credits every time, every episode of Developed By. Yeah. It's
he has the long fingernails.
James L. Brooks. Yeah. Sam Simon.
He's the Howard Hughes yeah. guy with the fingernails.
Yeah.
yeah.
In the
38th.
138 episode.
He
yeah,
actually looks a lot like Mike Reese, I think.
But so he left the show in the fourth season because he was fed up with it, and he was very open that he did not get along with Matt Groening. The two of them did not get along. But after he passed away, I had read this article on Vox that pointed this thing out, that the theory was, because he was the real brains behind the show, and people say, like, well, he created Mr. Burns, mm-hmm. he cultivated the staff of writers and the style of joke-telling on the show.
And he designed quite a few characters. Like, yeah. literally, the drawings were yeah. done by him.
Like, he's a professional cartoonist, too, on top of being an experienced showrunner. And he even talked about how, like, Matt Groening and him hated each other from the beginning yeah. because to Sam, it was just another TV show. And if The Simpsons failed, he'd just do another TV show. For mm-hmm. Matt Groening, this was his one chance.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
if it failed, he would just be a failure and never come back
and
to
you
Hollywood.
Can understand why Matt would want so much control over
totally.
It because it's
yeah.
like, this cannot go wrong for me. This is my dream that's
and,
happening.
And on that note, and I rarely think about this, but have before, Sam Simon is a guy I don't know a ton about. Know a lot more about him now. He's a approached death in one of the coolest ways ever. Mm. Just like was about to die and started giving his money away to a bunch of charities, being outspoken and recording a bunch of interviews to say fuck you to everybody before
yeah.
he left this earth.
Yeah.
But then he's I believe he had the like a record as the youngest showrunner being
yeah.
given Taxi.
23 in
yeah,
charge of Taxi.
Wow.
That's
so,
astounding.
And
yeah.
that show is like I don't love when but when I think back when I would see them like Nick at Night, like it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And when I think of reading Life and Hell, I don't see The Simpsons
yeah.
in any of the pages or things I remember about Life and Hell.
I kind of do. I mean, if you read enough of it, you can see where the observational humor from the first few seasons came from.
There are some observations.
It eventually became a lot more arch, a lot more Harvard-y mm-hmm. than what Matt Groening started with. But I do like Life and Hell a lot.
I do too. But what I do know rather well is the George Carlin show, the two-season Fox sitcom.
That's right.
Co-created by Sam Simon, George Carlin famously in his biography, even before either of them were dead, called Sam Simon a total piece of shit. But that humor in that show is way more Simpsons than Life and Hell.
It is.
Yeah. And, no, I think Sam Simon is due a lot of credit that people don't know. And it's also because from the beginning, when the show started, Matt Groening was, through his choice, through Fox's PR choice or whoever, he was the central dude to it. James L. Brooks was in it too, but it was very clear, like, Matt Groening created The Simpsons. Let's all talk to him about how great The Simpsons are and how he did it all. And so then you have this episode, and it never connected for me until reading this explanation. No. You have an episode about a guy who creates something, a jerk who takes all the credit, who then gets very rich off of taking that credit and puts out a bunch of crappy merchandise based on it. So the closest thing to a confirmation was this clip I found from one of Sam Simon's late-in-life interviews when he was already diagnosed with the stomach cancer that would take his life within 2 years. Mm. But
so there's this theory going around. I've only seen this theory online, but there's a theory that the premise behind the episode Flaming Moe's was kind of inspired by the relationship between yourself and Matt Groening. Is there any truth to that? Is that just an urban legend?
That may be true.
Oh, interesting.
The laughter there is just like, yeah.
That's a knowing
exactly.
laugh.
It's like, yeah, exactly.
It would be subtitled knowing laugh.
And
I feel like I want to isolate that for later on.
But yeah, they So on the commentary for this episode, they obviously never mentioned that. No. And
Al Jean is very diplomatic.
Yeah, Al Jean is super diplomatic. I think most of the writers...
Who's the credited writer on this show?
Rob Cohen, who is a disciple. Well, not a disciple, but he came up through Tracy Ullman and worked with Sam Simon. Like, I believe he is a Sam Simon friend. And most of the writers were because he recruited them. For a lot of them, it was their first TV writing job, or they had quit television writing, like John Swartzwelder and George Meyer, two of the most famous and best writers on the series. He got them both because they had quit SNL and then were just writing a fanzine called Army Men, and then he hired them.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the writers love him. I wonder if Matt then realized they were making fun of him. He has to know now.
Yeah.
I wonder if he knew during the episode commentary recording.
I think for Groening, it was like, bite your tongue and collect the $3 million. It's going to earn in syndication.
Oh, if only it was just $3 million. Sam Simon was very honest about that. Someone asked him, how much money do you make having not touched The Simpsons since like 1994? And he's like, I don't know. 10 million a year? He's like, way more than that. I'm like, fuck.
And then a hole in the ceiling burst and gold coins started pouring down.
But he spent
this whole place is falling apart.
He spent it on philanthropy.
He gave it all away,
dude.
He gave it all away. And all his fuck you things, so like things he agreed. I love he's on WTF talking about his vegan LA food bank, and like people have criticized it, like, why only vegan? Like, go somewhere else.
Yeah. If you don't want free food, you don't have to have it. But
if you'd like free vegan food, I'm here for you.
But he's also like, if I'm going to buy tons of food, I'm not going to do it through factory farming and killing animals. Yeah. Like, that's not how I'm spending my money.
And it's not like the homeless people who are going to be like, what? No meat? It's going to be it's like the people who read the story and are in the comments section.
Yeah. Guys, I make really the best vegan chili you've ever had. And I say that as a meat eater.
And Sam Simon.
It's three alarm at best.
Sam Simon in that same interview also said that when he worked on the show, he felt underpaid and undervalued. And now he says in every year after he left the show, he's felt overpaid and overvalued by it. But
God.
And that he was famously married to Jennifer Tilly, who was still around him. Like, they had one of those like amicable divorces, and she
they were good friends. And they make a joke about it later on in The Simpsons, where she plays herself as like the owner of The Simpsons.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And towards the end of his life, he would just post pictures, and he was always surrounded by beautiful women.
Yep.
Just constantly surrounded by beautiful women.
And he was
who
great
like,
friends with Pam Anderson because they were both vegans and PETA.
PETA people.
PETA people. Yeah.
Surrounded like by beautiful women, just like Mo in this episode.
That's right. Yes. We should talk about the episode.
We are going long, but this is might be like if you were to ask me to like show I love The Simpsons. After an alien asked me my favorite TV show, well, what episode should you see? I'm like, this one.
This one's great.
You should see this one.
And it's not just the writing. The directing is fantastic. Yeah. Rich Moore, and he had to step out because his kid was born, but someone named Alan Smart co-directed it. Beautiful colors, beautiful animation. It just looks so good. So beautiful.
Eye on Springfield opening alone.
Yeah, it opens with Eye on Springfield, our first taste of that.
Hello, I'm Kent Brockman, and this is Eye on Springfield.
Ever wondered what to close the show with on a fairly regular basis? I can't believe
these are all
visual
jokes.
But some of them are pretty.
How many times
next? An elephant who never forgets to brush.
How many times was this recycled? I remember it was at the beginning of the Critic episode. Was it ever again?
Yeah, but not as many times as you'd think.
They added in new jokes in that one too.
Yeah, but that was at least 20 seconds of. This is This is 20 seconds. You don't have to write. You don't have to animate. We'll just use it again in this episode.
No, but those are all like really like it's. I wish we could play it, but like it doesn't work as a clip. But they're all good jokes.
Yeah.
Him dropping sushi in a Japanese hot tub.
Love
like
his laughter on that. But also the
dog races.
The animators were really excited to draw women in bikinis like that.
Ooh,
was
TNA
super 90s bikinis.
Yeah, very 90s bikinis. But they were not Simpsons bodies. Those women did not have Simpsons bodies.
They looked straight out of like an Uncle
Playboy?
Luke video.
I did like the joke about Dredrick Tatum reminiscing about Springfield.
Ugh, what a dump.
Yeah.
Which made me think, like, he did end up back in Springfield for that fight against Homer, so I guess he did fuck up.
Yeah.
Oh, but not forever. But that's the only time they've ever done a bleep joke, as far as I can tell. And I want to know, as another first, we should be experts by now, but I keep forgetting where we are, because I do watch The Simpsons all the time outside of researching Talking Simpsons.
We salute the silver anniversary of the Great Springfield Tire Yard Fire. 25 years and still burning strong.
So the Simpsons Tire Fire is in the intro to the show and has been from the beginning. It's in the arcade intro, but I don't think it's been acknowledged until now.
Yeah,
as a thing that just never stops.
Yeah,
that's true. I wonder if they moved it when they moved the whole town over in the 200th episode.
We don't acknowledge that here.
But 2 years, Bobby.
Oh God, no.
A lot of first year. This is also where I did learn the term TNA as a 9-year-old.
Me too, probably.
Total Nonstop Action Wrestling.
Yes.
T&A, I should say. And this is Lisa's having a slumber party, and has more friends in this moment than she has ever had any episode.
There's only one that I recognize, Janie.
Was Janie there? Yes, she is. But there's Janie's two other girls too who are not.
One of them was a proto Samantha Stanky.
Or
braces and all that, but she didn't have the same hair color.
Or Hortense. Now, what was the name of the girl who had the Spider-Man doll? Gladys or no?
It was probably Gladys. Maybe.
What season is this? It sounds like it's
season 5.
It's a Malibu Stacy one.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Too drunk.
I never had a sister, so I don't know.
Yes, when your little sister has a slumber party and you're only like 2 or 3 years away. One, I loved how that episode is played because like time seems to go a lot slower when I was a kid. And I do remember we didn't live in a giant house, but most of it was around me dodging my sister and her friends.
During your childhood, mm-hmm. there's nothing more repellent than your sister's friends.
Oh.
Until you and your sister's friends hit puberty and then things change.
That happened to me, not to get too disgusting. I'm going to keep this PG-13, but my older sister had a friend who liked to torture me psychologically. She would try on outfits and come into my room how do I look in this, Bob? I'm like, I'm 12.
Fine.
And that was kind of like a fun nightmare I had.
My pants are tight.
Jeez. If you're still out there,
I'll tell you,
Melissa.
But I still lie under this blanket.
Wow, I see. This is stuff I miss by not having a sister.
Yeah, psychological torture works for everybody.
And I also, when they do the Jinx thing, I never knew that rule from Jinx. The punches of that. I'd heard of the "Oh, you a Coke Jinx," not
and
a
he
punch
says,
Jinx.
That's I guess we're Floridian, so we heard that too.
I was never formally Jinxed, even after this episode. Oh. It just seemed not to be in my area.
It's one of those things I've never seen anybody adhere to as rigidly as Homer does.
Yeah.
Who does say it's the law.
And Homer punches him real hard. That looks like a painful punch.
Yeah, Bart goes, ow!
This is the first, earned abuse in this show. Every other time, it's you're choking him for kind of small reasons, but this is you know what? You broke the jinx, you get punched.
Oh, and I thought the animators did a great job on, the horror film chase of Bart with the girls.
I meant to look that up, because I thought that was very specific to something.
Oh, that shot where Bart has his back pressed against the door, and they're drilling the screws out. The colors, the animation, it's just beautiful.
It's amazing.
It's a small little thing, but I love how Bart's, I don't know if it's his own instinct to go limp when he jumps out the window so he doesn't injure
himself.
That
was great.
I like him in that split second deciding, looking down, and then just falling, going
and just
limp.
The girls' reaction, well, all right, and they just turn around they don't care. And then when Homer sees Maggie that way and just leaves, I'm like, I hope Marge is here. They have not proven Marge is home, but I have to assume she's there.
But also, Homer at his wit's end, there's too much stupid shit going on. Yeah. I gotta get out of here.
So when he goes to Moe's...
There we go. I'm out of here.
We're finally at Moe's.
Yeah. We've seen Moe's at way darker than this since, but this is the worst it's looked at this point.
Yeah. I just
Barney's
got to call this...
not even...
I got to call this clip Moe Problems.
What's the matter, Moe?
Business is slow. People today are healthier and drinking less. You know, if it wasn't for the junior high school next door, no one would even use the cigarette machine.
Yeah, things are tough all over.
Increased job satisfaction and family togetherness are poison for a purveyor of mind-numbing intoxicants like myself.
Can I get a beer?
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, sorry, I forgot we're out of beer.
That's a nightmare.
That scream is so good.
Someone didn't do the Barney guarding job we heard about in Homer the Smithers.
Yeah,
cut his gums up pretty bad.
Pretty bad. I love how he says cut his gums up pretty bad. And that so there, without beer, I guess Barney is only a beer drinker because he's not there.
Well,
for alcohol.
But also in that song that he sang during the Sherry Bobbins episode, he'll drink anything.
I don't think we've seen him drinking turpentine yet, but he does that at one point in the series.
He hasn't gotten that low.
As someone as desperate as. Just last night, there's no more alcohol in my house and it's too late to get any more. the Homer tells the story of building the flaming Homer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the idea, the liquors they show that I can now recognize.
Is it like Tom Collins?
It's so gross.
It is gross.
It is so gross because he Patty or Selma drank the last beer, and Homer has to mix the last of what's left in his liquor bottles, and he just
is that
vermouth.
Something he'd do? No, like I've never done.
It
that.
It is so gross. It is. You know what all of them taste like.
You would just take a shot of each one. Yeah. I would think
it's kind
of
what teenagers do. It's like mom and dad aren't home. Let's sneak everything out of these bottles.
I've been to house parties where they've had like, I don't know what they called it exactly, but it's like basically just like
a suicide.
Kind of like just one of those like sports coolers that you get water out of, but they fill it with like a ton of alcohol and it all tastes like watermelon.
South,
so
we call it hunch punch.
Actually, I think that was a very special episode of Roseanne where they made hurricanes. Remember, like Becky and her friend got drunk, which was just mix everything together for.
Dylan wrote a song about that drink, this is the origin of the Flaming Homer.
I decided to mix the little bits that were left in every liquor bottle. In my haste, I had grabbed a bottle of the kid's cough syrup. Huh? I don't know the scientific explanation, but fire made it good.
Whoa, sounds like one hell of a drink. What do you call it?
A flaming Homer.
Okay, well, why don't you make us up a couple of flaming Homers?
So this is a minor little thing, but when Patty and Selma were going through their slides, they mentioned that they couldn't find a proper use for the ungodly Czechoslovakian outlets.
Oh,
I looked up Czechoslovakian outlets, and they are not ungodly.
No.
Maybe they have become godly in the two decades since.
It's the fall of the Soviet Union that did it. Yeah,
but it used like the standard in both Europe and Russia right now are the like. They're different than America, but they're just two little circles instead of the normal.
Still, like almost 30 years ago, doesn't it have a different name? Government
now it's the Czech Republic.
Yeah, but I imagine that they exaggerated. I know it's a cartoon,
but I hope somebody got fired.
So cough syrup. It should be noted that this is before they took the get you stoned ingredient out of cough syrup, which is what all my teenage friends like to do.
Dog, you ever gone robo tripping on that Tussin?
I didn't want to because all my friends were cool and liked video games and cartoons, and then they all started drinking cough syrup, and it was like, let's drink cough syrup and listen to Korn all day. I'm like, I don't want to do that or Tool.
Sucks, Bob. That does happen.
You can just have cough syrup to lessen it a little bit.
I abused anime and my body.
I had a very brief period, seemingly brief period in my life that was chasing a hallucinogenic high, and I would double a lot of stuff with Robitussin and stuff like that.
But this
robo
is
tripping. We
Krusty's
call it
non-narcotic with a K cough syrup.
That
so
this is back when they called you Chris Antusta.
And Chris,
Robo Chrisin.
I think Chris and I have both drank a what they call a Flaming Mo at Universal.
Never been there.
Okay, I drank it at the. I showed Bob and Dave videos of this beforehand, but at the Universal Studios Florida, and I believe in Hollywood now, they have a replica of Moe's Tavern, which is fairly accurate. I say like 80% accurate. And there you can order a Flaming Moe. Now, it has a lot of problems. They honestly shouldn't call it a Flaming Moe, but it's basically orange soda with dry ice on top, and it's
why can't it just be grape soda?
But it's not like so. One, it's not purple. Two, it's non-alcoholic. And three, you don't set it on fire.
It needs to be purple at least. But
I have the
20th Century Fox sanctioned recipe for a Flaming Moe. Four ingredients.
Oh, no.
We have 4 ounces of tequila, 4 ounces of peppermint schnapps, 4 ounces of creme de menthe, and 2 ounces of grape soda. So you can either use that or cough syrup. I recommend
that
grape soda.
That shit is gross, by the way. Like, you should never drink that.
Grape soda or creme de menthe?
Creme de menthe. All that together with tequila and grape soda?
I want a sip. I want a sip.
We should have made it for this episode.
I agree.
But the magic thing about Flaming Moes or Flaming Homers are that they don't... They're mythical. Like, nothing you...
Yeah.
No drink you light on fire would get
well,
better.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know if the writers were that afraid of copycats. Kids seeing this and trying to make their own drink. I just assumed that the flame was a caveat to say, like, well, you can't really recreate this. Because in order for a drink to be set on fire, it has to be very, very alcoholic.
Yeah, it does.
No tequila will ever do that.
Yeah.
Oh, and also the Love Tester, which makes his first appearance here, is also at the Moe's Tavern in Universal. And I tested it out. I got cold fish. I did the lowest rating.
So did Steven Tyler, though.
I have my line of the show already. This early.
That's the joke.
This is one of those lines I say very often. I still find it very funny. And not only do I find it very funny, The Simpsons found it funny enough to say just a few episodes later.
It's like there's a party in my mouth and everyone's invited.
Hey, your love tester's busted. I want my nickel back.
Nickelback is my quote of the show.
It's the debut of Nickelback. I do like it's not without its charms.
It's not without its
I use
charm.
That in writing all the time. Yeah. I'm like, am I ripping off Mo?
Yeah. No, yes, one you are. Yes, you are.
Hey, I'm allowed to.
For a second, I double checked on the internet. I thought maybe the party in your mouth and everyone's invited thing was just taken from a 70s commercial, but as far as I can tell, I think
it's,
the Simpsons
I think
invented
it's a
it.
Simpsons original.
Yeah, I think it's meant to sound like that, but it is very like a very Simpsons thing.
It's
to
a way
say.
Nobody would ever talk.
Yeah.
But yeah,
except for King Griffey Jr.
So you know the thing we're not talking about yet, and it's very weird for me that this is a kind of a largely a Cheers parody in addition to everything else.
Yeah,
so it becomes Cheers in the second act.
Yeah, and that like I remember yelling at we were a one TV household. Simpsons was one of those things that I and my sister and my father would like, and that meant it got watched every Sunday and Thursday because we all liked it. A lot of that stuff didn't make a... I remember hating Cheers. And my mom was like, entertaining me as a young man. Like, why do you hate Cheers? And like, because it's all about sex! Because I barely knew about sex. And every time we watched it, I thought it was the most scandalous
that,
show I'd
and
ever
being
seen.
Being set in a bar all the time. It's like, I don't understand any of this. I will never drink.
And this clip of the Shelley Long character does validate fucking puritanical 6-year-old me.
Barkeep, I couldn't help noticing your sign.
The one that says bartenders do it till you bar?
No, above that store-bought drollery.
Oh, great. Why don't we fill out an application? I'll need your name, measurements, and turn-ons.
You really expect me to tell you my measurements?
You could, but I find this way is much more accurate and fun.
Ugh. What do you offer in the way of salary?
Minimum wage and tips. Of course, there are fringe benefits.
Such as?
An unforgettable weekend at Club Mo.
I'd prefer to take my vacation someplace hot.
I like your moxie, kid. You're hired.
You shan't regret this.
I shan't.
This is a very, like, Sam and Diane from Cheers bantering scene.
I also got shades of Cocktail, the Tom Cruise movie.
They were going for that too, Dave.
Yeah, like, I had cousins and a sister who just loved
you
Tom Cruise.
You shan't regret this was in Lisa's Pony, though, as well.
Yeah. Oh, you're right,
I mean, this goes back to Sam Simon again. He wrote on Cheers in the first seasons, the Sam and Diane seasons, and so he knew how to write dialogue just like that and worked real hard on that part. We did skip over the bit just like Mo takes all the credit for it. He's like, it's the Flaming Mo.
Mo takes all the credit for the Flaming Mo.
And
but this is just starting. And like, I love, if you listen to the background, it has like 1920s speakeasy music.
Yeah.
And then it moves on to Yuppie Bar and like Family Bar.
Though as I stretched out the symbolism here with Bob earlier, it was that so Moe's Tavern is the original Simpsons. Moe is the creator of Moe's Tavern, and that is Matt Groening is the creator of the original Simpsons, but he can't make it work.
But Homer brought the Flav.
And so Homer brings the thing that actually makes it successful, and Moe takes all the credit for that. So that, I think it really fits together in that theory.
So who's Barney in this situation?
James L. Brooks.
Somehow is a hanger on...
He literally represents gentrification.
Yeah, but
to me now and San Francisco.
I don't... The one thing I don't understand about this episode is how does he, like osmosis, like get successful... Because he's just at Moe's Tavern still.
I think it's just there to rub it in Homer's face. Like, even Barney is profiting from this.
He's also way more disgusting than Homer. So why is he allowed in all the time and not Homer?
Well, he's networking, man.
I mean, a sneeze guard joke disgusted me.
So according to, going back to Henry's analogy, Seth MacFarlane is a representative of Tipsy McStagger.
Oh, God.
Pardon me, are you the genius behind the Flaming Moe?
Why, yes, I'm
your man.
Uh-huh. My name's Hawk Bannister. I work for Tipsy McStagger's Good Time Drinking and Eating Emporium.
Oh, yeah? Hey, what's Mr. McStagger really like?
Actually, there is no Tipsy McStagger. He's just a composite of other successful logos.
Well, you tell him from me that he makes one great mozzarella stick.
Yes, fine, I will. Anyway, I've got a proposition for you.
Keep talking.
We feel your Flaming Moe is perfect for our restaurant chain. We want to buy the recipe.
No dice. The Flaming Moe is not for sale. Do you know how much of my blood and sweat are in this drink? figure of speech.
I do love Harry Shearer's bit parts. There's so much life in this character that we only talk to for a few scenes.
Yes, well, yes, I sure will.
Tipsy McStagger, Mo thinking Tipsy McStagger is real is a great running joke. Yeah.
Well, and so the Diane part, Colette, she was originally played by Catherine O'Hara.
Oh, yeah.
And but they said it didn't animate correctly, so they then got one of their stock voice actors, Joanne Harris.
They used the temp track, she did it originally,
yeah.
And her name is Colette, but I don't think they ever name her within the episode.
No,
like, I was looking for that. I'm like, how do you know her name is Colette? But I guess it was just in the script.
It's a Wikia, yeah.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Are you already tired of 2016? Jump into the past with 302010, our weekly pop culture time machine podcast. Here's something you may remember from 1996.
In case you don't know what Kinder the Embraced is, it's based on the White Wolf tabletop RPG series Vampire the Masquerade.
Oh. Can you hold these books so I can knock them on the ground?
Is tabletop RPGs too far for you?
No, one of my friends played this stuff. I did find it impenetrable.
I was D&D, it's fine.
They made Vampire the Masquerade, Werewolf the Apocalypse, Mage the Awakening.
Can you say this like Troy McClure, please?
These are just random words and adjectives.
Werewolf the Apocalypse.
Zombie the Simmering.
Well, no, they were...
And Frankenstein the Lumbar.
All right, but fine. Enough about Kindred.
I never get to make fun of anybody for being a nerd. If you could see the room we're in right now.
There is
an alphabetized Disney shelf right behind me.
Did your hubby play these games?
He did, actually. And my boyfriend at the time did. I went to one party.
Ooh,
they were
playing. She does have a type. She does have a type.
Oh, yeah. Fucking losers.
That's 302010, a weekly look at what happened in pop culture 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago, every Thursday right here on the Laser Time Network.
In terms of names, this I thought was fun.
The inventor I admire, by Bart Simpson. The inventor I admire is not a rich man or a famous man or even a smart man. He's my father, Homer Simpson, creator of, dun-dun-dun-dun, the Flaming Homer!
The Flaming Homer? You mean the Flaming Mo! And your dad didn't invent it, you wuss! Mo the bartender did!
Yes, everyone knows that.
It's not true. My father invented that drink, and if you'll allow me to demonstrate...
Bart, are those liquor bottles?
Brought enough for everybody.
Take those to the teacher's lounge. You can have what's left at the end of the day.
I do like how Nelson knows.
Yeah, this episode really establishes Edna Krabappel's alcoholism.
Yeah.
I have only two visions of a teacher's lounge from the 80s when I was in elementary school, and I do remember a door opening and a shitload of smoke.
Yeah.
Like, a lot.
Smoke and drink.
So, like, all this just seemed natural. It didn't seem like jokes. I just assumed that's what was happening. But it also is that... Mo's name is Mo Sislak. Or Momar Sislak.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, nobody knows that. Mo the bartender is how Nelson refers to him.
I love that he calls it Mo the bartender. You know, Mo Sislak was only invented to make him a possible suspect in the murder of Monty Burns.
That's true.
To give him
called
the
Morris later.
But it's nice. Yeah. It's like a nice, quaint little thing that establishes that it's like Springfield is a small town and everyone knows each other. Yeah. So Mo is the bartender.
Yeah.
This person is the florist.
But I did love, I felt like I did that once or twice as a kid, like bringing something from home, and then the teacher going like, "You can't bring this! What are you doing?
Take that revolver home, man!"
And it's my dad's cool toy.
See, this is my runner-up for line of the show.
Henceforth, this date shall forever be known as Flaming Moe's Day.
Sir, this is already Veterans Day.
It can be two things.
Very disrespectfully, I always say Happy Flaming Moe's Day on Veterans Day, and no one gets the joke. No one gets the joke.
I'll do that the next Veterans.
I also like the episode before this. I feel like had the most licensed music I'd ever seen from the show, and this just has a ton of house music that they create, the montage stuff.
With one or two notable exceptions. Well,
before we get to the big band, I do want to point out something we could miss because we're young but still old.
Yes.
This is also parodying the rise of the corporate adult eatery, which came before the rise of the corporate family eatery, like Chili's, Applebee's, and stuff like that. And the Flaming Moe's is kind of based on this restaurant called the Coconut Teaser that had its own drink. And if you watch MST3K, they make a reference to these silly, crazy restaurant drinks.
What?
The reference is, it's the Fintuzler, and you can keep the glass. Like, if you hear that reference, reference. They're making fun of the early '90s novelty drink at an adult corporate restaurant.
Yeah, that did not stick with me at all.
I'm waving my hands around a lot, but it's all true.
Because Mike Nelson worked at a TGI Fridays for a long time.
That's right.
He knew those
that was
very
his job
well.
Before MST.
Yeah.
I also did like just the little bit of Krusty punching the photographer just to show like anything that happens in Hollywood horribleness. Like if Sean Penn did it, they can just hand it to him. If Bob Hope did it, like
if Woody Allen does it, Krusty.
The writer said it was a Frank Sinatra reference, but I couldn't find it. It seemed like a Sean Penn punching the photographer thing.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
He's done way worse than that. So.
Yeah, but so when Bart comes wearing the Flaming Moe shirt and they insist that he takes the shirt off, like I just like how relaxed he is. Like, okay,
we're coming up on like the exact halfway point in my lifetime where I was comfortable taking my shirt off in front of people. it is almost there. This is the celebrity guest for the episode.
We have to talk about this.
Aerosmith.
Come up here. How about a warm Flaming Moe's welcome for Aerosmith?
We're just hanging out.
Oh, come on, guys. Free pickled eggs.
All right.
Hello, St. Louis.
That's Springfield, Stephen.
Right.
That's fun.
It is just a follow up to the SNL Aerosmith appearance, which is like one of the funniest Wayne's World sketches ever.
It is good. Yeah,
that they all the members of Aerosmith have different comedic things to offer.
And Steven Tyler's Simpsons persona might be one of the least flattering I've ever seen.
I think it's ghoulish and extreme, and they would not go this far. But it's perfect. It's such a great caricature of him. Even the way he moves and talks.
Well, he's saying hello, St. Louis. Like his face is so close to the camera, and like he has like no nostrils. It's very creepy.
No, I would say he looks better as a Simpson than he does currently. Mm-hmm.
But in 1991, could there be a cooler band to have on The Simpsons? Yeah, like when I was a kid, I didn't know this was an old band. Like, oh, these new cool rockers, and I'm going to listen to Big Ones over and over.
Get a grip, man.
Yeah, they were like, they either or were on the verge of like Living on the Edge, and like, although the Alicia Silverstone trilogy of the songs.
Yeah, Take Me to the Other Side. Yeah. At this point, Love in an Elevator was out.
No, they were I was super into them too. Like, they were the first CD I ever owned was an Aerosmith CD.
The Pierce Cow Nipple Man.
Yeah, how edgy.
I think it was Get a Grip, and then also Pumped or whatever, the one with the two trucks on the cover.
There's very little music from my upbringing that I consider unlistenable and terrible, and Aerosmith is all of that. Yeah. I cannot stand it.
Ragdoll. It has
not aged well. No, I will say, I hope I'm not offending anybody who likes Aerosmith,
love at first sight.
That's like the one I might... Like, I would not change the radio immediately or punch something.
Or the Crazy and the other one.
Crazy.
But, like, how Tipsy McStagger is the corporate soulless restaurant chain. Like, Aerosmith has become the corporate soulless rock band, where it's like, if you go to Vegas, there's Aerosmith stuff everywhere. Because Vegas is now, like, the boomer, like, death spot. Yeah. Like, I'm going to go there to die.
I'll be there
and remember the things I like.
I was going to say, we'll be there in 20 years buying Tiny Toons merchandise.
The Hard Rock Cafe Casino is just, like, the boomer. Valhalla.
I'm telling you guys, if you've been to Vegas now, they're making inroads into selling it to us now. They're like, they've got the Batman stuff, but it's Batman 66. I know there was a Family Guy slot machine. I don't believe I saw a Simpsons one, though. But,
that'd be weird.
But so about the Aerosmith, how they did it. One was that they had heard they were interested, but then they had to actually like wine and dine them to get them on. And then if you see a bearded guy who is not a member of the band, that is their A&R representative, John Kolodner, who Aerosmith insisted on being in the thing.
That's
too
nice.
So
of them.
Each guitarist or each member of the band gets at least one line.
Yeah.
And then John Kolodner is just drawn with them all the time, and you can tell in the commentary they are not happy they put Kolodner in, and they're like, we would not do this with future people. We say, like, no, we're not. Like, we draw you. We're not drawing your friends in here.
They said they had done it again after that. Like, if you see an unrelated person with the celebrity, and you know they had a demand and we needed to put them in. But, and, I mean, I think they cut the cord at some point.
And the other bit they have is that originally the way you heard him say free pickled eggs in the clip, originally the line was free beer, but they had just gone through AA.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, so could you make it free pickled eggs? It's funnier. Right?
It's a better joke,
That sounds delicious, though.
And lastly, that they were able to record it. So Gene and Reese, like most of the writers on it, went to a certain college in Boston.
Yeah.
And Aerosmith is based out of Boston, too. And
Disneyland for white people.
Gene and Reese
really
went to their college reunion, brought Hank Azaria with them, and the Mo stuff is recorded with Aerosmith.
Mm,
and so when he's later in the episode singing Walk This Way with him, that's him really singing it. Like, Hank Azaria was there with them singing it. And so that's why it feels a little better than it normally would with a celebrity interview.
The rest of these clips, this is the longest episode ever. Mo and Homer argue.
The flaming Homer.
I quote the episodes in here.
I get it.
How could you do this to me, Mo? This bar was going under, and it was the drink I invented that saved it. If there was any justice, my face would be on a bunch of crappy merchandise.
Morris, is what this man's saying true?
Well, it's hard to say. He may have come up with the recipe, but I came up with the idea of charging $6.95 for it.
So
that's not bad.
Yeah,
well, for
nowadays,
91.
Especially in San Francisco, where everything's overpriced.
Dickhead said it while watching the thing about the Flaming Moe's Universal Studios. That in San Francisco, we already pay theme park prices for all food.
Food and drinks.
Yeah, he's talking about how a beer, a 20-ounce beer, is $7. I'm like, yeah, that's like for most bars in San Francisco.
Yeah, somebody was shocked by my behavior. I was at an amusement park and in a hotel. I'm like, yeah, I don't care. Mini bar. Theme park stuff, like, this is all cheaper than where,
especially
what I
for a cocktail. Like, cocktails are even pricier than beer. I think, right?
$6.95 is great for it. Dude, I got two double Grey Gooses at Twin Peaks, the picturesque Castro bar, just last week. $40.
Wow.
$40. No mixers.
Whoa. Don't go to that bar.
Ice and vodka.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they also see Miss Krabappel, and like, not unlike in the Ion Springfield thing. The animators were going crazy, like, oh, we get to draw a sexy woman? All right. And they knocked it out of the park. Miss Krabappel has never looked higher.
Does not care that she's she is going to fuck a married parent.
But Homer,
out of
all the men in that bar, like, Homer's the one she's like,
well, later she's got to be wasted.
Later she's with two sailors, so she traded up.
And Joey from Aerosmith, right?
Really need my drumsticks.
I need my drumsticks.
Do we have the Hugh Jazz call?
Of course we do.
Thank you.
The telephone. Flaming Moe's.
Yes, I'm looking for a friend of mine.
Last name Jazz, first name Hugh.
Hold on, I'll check. Hugh Jazz! No, somebody check the men's room for a Hugh Jazz!
I'm Hugh Jazz.
Telephone.
Hello, this is Hugh Jazz.
Hi.
Who's that?
Bart Simpson.
What can I do for you, Bart?
Look, I'll level with you, mister. This is a crank call that sort of backfired, and I'd like to bail out right now.
All right. Better luck next time.
Oh, my God.
Nice young man.
I gotta say, this is a weird tangent, but I love Hugh Jazz. I kind of want to spend, like, an afternoon with him. He'd make you some cocktails, put on some records. Like, he is so comfortable with who he is, and I'm jealous. Like, I'm Hugh Jazz, so what a nice boy.
Oh, you were using me for a prank? That's okay.
I get this all the time.
Yeah.
What a polite boy.
He's the most, like, comfortable in his own skin character, I think, on The Simpsons, and we need to see Hugh Jazz again.
He just lets it go. But the back and forth between Homer and Mo, he's, like, just talking over everybody.
In all honesty, that's my favorite scene in the show, and I didn't get it just because it doesn't work without, like, showing how busy Moe's bar is that it ends. You can use
that
it.
That's like, my quote of the episode. And
so good.
And also something that I used a lot when I used to work at GameStop. So, like, anytime we had a customer that was just being an a-hole, like, after they left, we would do that, like, you just lost yourself a customer. And also, like, when we're shouting things from across the store, like, doing inventory, and, like, you mishear something, the response would be, yeah, you can use it.
Wow.
But, yeah, just love that line.
That's perfect.
And then I'd love that the third act opens with just the Cheers theme to just let you know this is now an episode of Cheers you're watching. And the Flaming Moe's song is so great. So depressing.
It warms my heart in a dark way, though. Yeah.
Liquor in a mug can warm you like a hug.
And it had rare blood for the scene. Well, not rare blood, but it, like, the way the guy was bleeding out of his mouth from being out there.
I think one guy had a cut hand, too, and like a broken bottle as a knife.
Also, firmly establishes that even though Barney is, like, all fancied up, he is still a hideous drunk and is disgusting.
I think, like most businessmen, he's always drunk.
And this is all part of my quest to capture every single Phil Hartman appearance
on
the show. Lionel Hutz appears for almost no reason, and it's great anyway.
I love it.
So, Mr. Hutz, does my husband have a case?
I'm sorry, Mrs. Simpson, but you can't copyright a drink.
No!
Oh, this all goes back to the Frank Wallbanger case of 78. How about that? I looked something up. These books behind me don't just make the office look good. They're filled with useful legal tidbits, just like that.
I feel like it was some writer that, like, we can't make Hutch Hutz be right or do research, and the rest of the joke is just to follow up on the Marv Wahlbanger joke.
Well, like, so the
he can't, Lionel Hutz is not allowed to have knowledge.
It is a it is a very brief scene that almost wonders like, wow, they paid Phil Hartman for just one voice in one scene.
He's
but
the next the three episodes surrounding this.
Yeah, I assume it was like one big session, right?
Well, this scene is important from a plot standpoint because you have to be able to say like, why did Homer reveals what it is. Why does that mean everybody can make it? Because you can't copyright a recipe. You had to have Hutz explain that to the audience, to kids like me who I didn't know that was
also like it makes Homer's being crazy like gives a little bit more context. Like he tried going other avenues and didn't work.
Yeah, I do like how Hutz is surprised by his own competence. Yeah. Like, oh, I could oh, wow, I knew something.
I just love it that he calls him useful legal tidbits.
Yeah.
Also, this animation sequence, I'm just running out of there's too many lines in this.
There's
to play.
So
we're
many
running
lines.
Out of time, but
stupid moan. Uninventing recipe stealing poke
nose. Homer, maybe you can take some consolation in the fact that something you created is making so many people happy.
Oh, look at me. I'm making people happy. I'm the magical man from Happy Land in a gumdrop house on Lollipop Lane.
I guess that's it. Oh, cannot believe I didn't get the rest of it.
This episode directed by Rich Moore, that scene, David Silverman.
Yeah.
Period. Who did it?
I do a ton of Simpsons quotes to my girlfriend rather reluctantly, but the ones I act out, that is one of them. Like, and
my favorite of the act outs is the way he puts his hands over says like gumdrop house. Like
Lollipop Lane, where it looks like he's using his hand to create magic little gumdrop points.
David Silverman is making just the king. He really happy. Well, I don't know, my Mount Rushmore of Simpsons directors are probably Silverman, if Brad Bird counts, Brad Bird, Jim Reardon, and Rich Moore. Yeah. But man, the Silverman stuff, like, he doesn't get every character great, but he is the master of Homer. Nobody does Homer better than Silverman. I also, though, I love the appearance by Frink. I feel like we hadn't seen Professor Frink in a while. Yeah. And I also like the callback I never got until this viewing. So at Show and Tell, Martin's talking about his hero who invented the gas chromatograph. Yeah, and Frink is using a gas chromatograph to analyze it.
So, Al Jean said that's the one thing he learned from Harvard. He had to put it in the show.
That is, I was so bored by that one part of the episode. I'm like, what the hell is Martin going on about? I don't care. I had paid attention.
It was one of those Simpsons callbacks you never noticed, but Jesus, can we please just give hats off to Dan Castellaneta and the when Homer spoils everything.
Oh, yeah, the Phantom of the Opera scene.
You're going to be a rich man, Mo. I got to tell you, the way we usually work in these situations is to steal the recipe and run the inventor out of business. C'est la vie.
What the?
You poor, pathetic, misguided creatures choking down your flaming moes, all the time wondering, how does he do it? Well, I'm going to tell you. The secret ingredient is...
Homer, no!
Cough syrup. Nothing but plain, ordinary, over-the-counter children's cough syrup.
I like the little hand over his mouth when he's doing it.
And that was after Mo had already decided to split the profits with Homer.
He could have gotten $500,000.
This was preceded by one of, like, like two or three episodes ago, we had the dream sequence, but like Homer just going Mo.
Sequence was also great, but
Homer?
I think I say all work and Mo play makes Mo more than all work and no play makes Jack a Dull Boy.
You promised me Mo money.
I'm Mo. Now,
the whole scene right now.
If I was Mo when Homer was about to reveal it, I would have grabbed the contract and signed it immediately and be like, nope, signed it.
It's
sorry.
Bonding.
Oh, he said it, yeah.
Or like bonding. Throw a mug at him, he'll fall down, and you can cover his injury costs with
yeah.
He falls anyways.
Crashes on Aerosmith, and John Kolodner is so shocked by it too.
Yeah, if you're looking for John Kolodner, if you're a real Kolodner head, he's standing next to Barney with putting his hand up when Homer crushes
Aerosmith.
And it
is non-canonical, but it was the first time Maggie had ever opened her mouth and said a word.
Yeah.
But it doesn't count, but in the show, it was the first time she'd done that.
I love this
episode. And then it ends with Moe's ruined, everybody can make a flaming Moe. They make a classic joke about, if you ever have a Cheers thing, you have to make a joke about how Shelley Long left the show in the the fifth year, yeah. and how. But I think it's because but comedy that writers hated her for doing.
Like Cheers was still on. That was like happening concurrently.
But she was a couple years. She was a few years gone from the show.
Oh, really?
We were deep into the Kirstie Alley season.
Yeah,
at this
it would
point.
End this year, this season, right? 92, I think. Yeah.
No.
yeah.
So, didn't it go to 96?
No, it like ended 92. Pretty early.
You're thinking of Frasier.
I did like. Sorry, but we watched like a video, like tour of the Simpsons area at Universal Studios, and there is a Moe's Tavern, but there is also a pop-up Flaming Moe's store.
Yeah,
to like show like yeah,
just
it's
like that
everywhere.
In the show. Yeah. But I think the Shelley Long jokes are always because comedy writers on Cheers were pissed at her for leaving. And so they just teach it to younger comedy writers like, yeah, it was bullshit she left. She shouldn't have left. She had a terrible movie career.
To make what, Camp Nowhere and The Money Pit
and nothing
things
else.
Like that.
Like she was very
Troop Beverly Hills, maybe? Is that Goldie Hawn? Is that Goldie Hawn?
That's not either of them, I
okay.
believe.
Some Shelley, other blonde lady, I guess.
She barely made films. That was a joke. And I also do like, now looking back on it, the joke is, oh, Aerosmith would never come back. The Red Hot Chili Peppers would be back in a year and a half. So, yes. and the song Taking Him Out was an original. It was not the master off the CD of that song.
Oh, yeah.
They recorded an original version of it for the episode.
I forget what it's
episode.
Called. It's on that album from that time.
But it was very sweet that, you know, I mean, even though, you know, Homer had a right to be angry at Moe and vice versa, that they just like, you know, it's not two wrongs to make it right, but it's like, we're friends, and this, like,
yeah,
this
Mo
is just
realized
water
he was
under the bridge.
A shithead, so yeah. he was like, I deserve this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was Talking Simpsons, probably our longest episode. Lisa's Pony was really long, but I like it. I like talking about it. I like getting all the clips out. And again, I've been Bob Mackey, your host, and you can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. I do another podcast. It's a classic gaming podcast called Retronauts. All these guys have been on it. You can find it at retronauts.com, usgamer.net, or just search for Retronauts in your podcast machine. Everybody else, where do you live and where can we find you?
Laser Time, baby. You can find Laser Time Podcast on the internets and most places you can get podcasts. Not on Stitcher right now, for whatever reason.
If that one is the only one. But
Stitcher, we were just good enough for Stitcher, I think.
But yeah, if I've emailed them about it, we'll see. But anyway, we also do 302010, our time capsule podcast, where you talk about what happened 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 10 years ago that week. It's a bit like the intro of the history stuff. We do that all in one episode. And this is a Patreon supported podcast, obviously. And if you have not supported us, you know you can get the first season of Talking Simpsons all on there exclusively, as well as our season 2 wrap up and a ton of other extras, including our weekly podcast bonus time and the Monday Night Movie commentary.
And I host Cheap Podcast, the Pro Wrestling Podcast. I was straining for some kind of a comparison in this episode, so I'm going to go with this. Aerosmith did the theme song for WWE SummerSlam 2009. There's your fact.
Ooh. We'll be back next week when the Germans appear. Later, everybody.
The Germans.
Again, I have failed.
When the weight of the world has got you down and you want to end your life. Bills to pay, a dead-end job, and problems with a wife. But don't throw in the towel, cause there's a place right down the block where you can drink your misery away. At Flaming Moe, when liquor in a mug can warm you like a hug. Just a flaming Moe away. Happiness is just a flaming Moe away.